very special guest, Paul Diener, has called in from Silver Bay, and I am so grateful to have you here, Paul. Thanks for coming.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me time on the air.
Oh, absolutely. Super privileged to have you here. I'm sure listeners know this, but Paul Diener is the director of Lake Superior Community Theater and most recently The Diary of Anne Frank. I guess we're about 3 weeks past a play that was, what, 2 years in the making? Boy, what a ringer you have been through with the pandemic. And now to be coming out on the other end with such an outstanding performance must feel pretty good.
Oh, it feels great. And it's actually the second play that either got delayed or canceled because of the pandemic. We were set to do Junie B. Jones, the musical, with a very young cast of children in the spring of 2020. And we had to shut it down, long story short. And then the following year, we were ramping up to do, or 2 years later, The Diary of Anne Frank, but our lead actress became ill, non-COVID, and had to stand down. So that delayed that show a year. And the school district, specifically Kelly School, was fabulous in allowing us to keep our set on stage. You know, we did break it down, so we could lean it up against the back wall and shove some of it into the scene shop. So Principal Joe Nicolay and Kelly administration were just fabulous in accommodating us. And the music department, oh my gosh, because that's their stage as well. So
yeah. Well, I have to say, to me, that racked up as one of the greatest hardships of the whole pandemic was your theater being cut down. I just felt like that is what is most needed right now. And it was one of the most stymied because of its glorious in-personness. So I am just so excited that it seems to be back in its full splendor. Would you say you are completely off and running now as if there was no pandemic, or even better, or are there things that are lingering?
I'd say we're solid. We've recovered money that we lost from ticket sales, either through grants or donations, or the ticket sales we got from Anne Frank. So we are financially real solid. And the creative juices at the top, so to speak, are still flowing, still thinking, and we'll see what happens. Related to that, Katya, many of your listeners know we passed a bond issue to do some reconstruction at Kelly and Two Harbors. And because of that, the art wing, half of the art wing at Kelly School, will be demolished in the coming months to make way for the new music department. And I believe the art department will move down to that wing as well. Because of that, music will be moving onto the stage. Essentially, that stage will become a classroom the entire next school year, which will influence our ability to even perform on that stage in terms of community theater and the scale we do things at. So it may be because of that another year or two, or another 2 years before we might be back on stage. So that's a whole interesting twist in this saga of, you know, pandemic, health issues, reconstruction issues, and then being on the stage as a regular thing. Heads up on that.
Okay, that is another big cog in the wheel, although there is the Two Harbors stage. Could that play in at all, or I know it's far away?
I think about that often, as I guess the face of the organization. But I live in Finland.
Yeah.
So the drive down to Two Harbors is, you know, 50 minutes, 50-minute drive back.
Yeah.
And I do get concerned about deer, literally, and falling asleep at the wheel late at night after giving it at rehearsals. So there's a heavy lift there involving Two Harbors. And then even if we were to build the set in the Kelly Scene Shop, we still have to truck it.
Yeah.
And that's a cost. And you have to plan for getting it through the scene shop doors the diagonal is only 8.5 feet on that. So our set designer has to plan to get through a collapsible set to get through those small doors at Kelly. So that's another practical issue a lot of folks don't realize, that kind of lift. We could do it in Two Harbors, but if you look in the Two Harbors scene shop, some of it has been taken over by storage and by the great industrial technology department. So there'd have to be a rethink of Two Harbors administration on how to use that space as well, because it's right across the hall from the Two Harbors stage, that very practical access.
Yeah.
So something to think about there as well.
Yeah. Yep. I getcha. There are practical realities with that. And but let's turn back to the Diary of Anne Frank. You know, when I heard that that was the play you were going to do, I was so moved, because I knew there's no way to do that play in a halfway way. Like, you're either going to really move people or you're not. And when you look back on it, you know, what are you thinking now?
I'm thinking it was 100% success. I'll be real upfront on it.
Yeah.
This thing was a huge success artistically, art direction wise, the acting, the message, the way it, the cast took it in deep, and the audience took it in deep, and it was a very reverent, deep experience that way. And there are three shows, tragedies we've done. This one, Fences, Death of a Salesman, and I'd rank all three of those as huge artistic successes for the our company, and because of the cast and the excellent writing, the script writing.
I mean, what a gift that you and your crew have given to the community that way. I mean, it just really, you know, every time I see a play, I think, and, you know, this does come from the actors, too. You know, I talk to them and they say, oh, Paul's the artist. He's the one that's brought this out of me. But, you know, there's so few actors and actresses that are just sort of doing anything by rote. I mean, they are, they become those people. And I feel that every time. How do you draw this out of people? And, you know, I come from a community where there was tons of theater. I've been in lots of plays. And I just think anyone can go there, but they have to know how. They have to be taught how to do that. You know, what's your magic?
I don't know if it's magic. I'd say it's spirituality and American soul, and not religious spirituality, but being in touch with something within that allows that creative self-expression. And it's a very high experience. I tell our casts every time that art is godliness. It's that grace within. And, you know, as a young child, I was given that gift.
Yeah.
We all have gifts. And my family supported that. And so that is something within. And I've accepted that, and wanting to express that honestly, and that whole American soul thing. This is beyond technique. It is something deeper within us. And, you know, we're Minnesota nice people, and we're North Shore nice people. But when we do these plays, we have to go for the artistic jugular. You cannot hold back.
Yeah.
So I had always encouraged our cast to dump the Minnesota, embrace New York City, get your East Coast edge on, and we have to dig deep. And I'll make a comparison here. I don't think, as magnificent as it was, that the Duluth Playhouse production of Anne Frank was violent enough.
Yeah.
They had to dig deeper. And this is a horror show that has to be faced and discussed by all of us. So, you know, the approach that Anne Frank was this voice and this shining light, which she was, to me, is overshadowed by what happened here.
Yeah.
We are talking about genocide, homicide, authoritarianism, murder. We're talking about what can happen to people when they go off the rails. And that's the Duluth Playhouse production was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. But I wanted to see them take it deeper that way and focus on the horror. And that's what we tried to do.
You did. And I cannot express what it was like to be in that audience after the family, the group of eight was taken down, you know, and then you had sound, you had noise, like very, it's just the effects alone. Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. And I think you did manage to create that. And that was what gave it the depth that it had. I mean, it just really was. And I did notice at the end, you know, it was just hard to even know exactly how to respond because it just wasn't a typical rah, rah, rah. Everyone did such a wonderful job. You know, I felt like the actors as well, they were just feeling the weight of it as they came out to take their bows. And I don't know, it was really something.
Well, you do know. You touched on something on you. I thought it was truthful. It went deep. And these are things that need to be addressed or talked about. You know, the art can speak for itself. It's easy to politicize this experience based on what's happening in our country and in the world. But, you know, the art oftentimes speaks for itself, and you just lay it out there. And like Bruce Springsteen wrote, the prophets down here don't write nothing at all. They just lay it out and just let it all be. And that's what you got to try and do.
Yes. Was this play on your list for a long time, or was it the times that led you to say, this is the time for Anne Frank?
That's a great question. I don't know if I'd necessarily say it was on my list, but we have to listen to those voices within. Now, religious or Christian folks might call it the voice of God. I call it the tap on the shoulder. You might call it female intuition, but you have to listen to those voices. They're there for a reason. And then with the absolute catastrophe of the Trump administration and the sellout by the right-wingers in our country and leaders of the Republican Party, I could see we could all see the corruption happening in our culture and in our politics and the absolute sellout for power and money. And so I think the rise of that in our country also became an influence in this thing tapping me on the shoulder of a artistic expression or a reaction to that absolute corruption that was happening. Mm-hmm. And of course now we see the January 6th report, which I'm reading, the Mueller report, which I read, the reports on TV, the busting of the lies on Fox News, and the indictments of Trump. This is just the beginning of the accountability, and that wave is here, and it's coming. So I'm happy to see that that's happening, and it's also tragic. But our country has a lot of accountability to do, and so do our politicians who stand on the deck stage smiling from ear to ear while this felon is standing behind them, you know, this corruption thing happening. And then what I thought was a sort of corruption in Two Harbors with the former mayor and these ideas he was coming forward with, you know, hey, where's the accountability here? These may be creative ideas, but I think we're sliding into a corruptive kind of governmental process here with our politics. And so those were all voices out there that I think spoke to me.
Yeah. Well, thank you for describing your experience. And there was also very today type, immediate issue that occurred right before your first performance with the quote-unquote active shooter meme and canceling that show. I think probably most listeners know what happened. What's your perspective on that now?
Well, my perspective is two things. Number one, it could be described as a prank.
Right.
It could be described as an act of terrorism.
Right.
Number two, our cast members pointed out, what was the intent of this active shooter meme at Kelly High on March 23rd? That was distributed to various cell phones by a student from Two Harbors High School, a juvenile. I have no idea who this person is. The person's been charged with felony. We'll see what happens. Their third appearance is going to happen in May in Lake County District Court. I'm keeping tabs on this. We see ourselves, our community theater, as victims of this, not to mention the close to 500 people who were in that immediate auditorium when this individual decided to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be clear from my point of view. This was an act of terrorism. It sparked fear in some people. And you're wondering, oh my God, does someone in our auditorium have a piece? Are they going to stand up and open fire? What's going to happen? And we've got law enforcement scrambling and administration back there trying to figure out what to do, and our students being very calm. Some of them already knew this because they got it on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
So we know what the impact was. Don't know what the intent was.
Right.
But I know what the impact was. And I know, you know, practically speaking, there's a monetary thing. I know it wasn't much, relatively speaking, but $500.
Right.
Of ticket sales and paper costs for programs and tickets for the kids who got turned away, because in one second, this individual took their finger, might have been the index finger, and pressed send. That's all it took. Now, we as a society have to look at that. And I know our school board is looking at that. And I know that beyond the practicalities of cell phone use in the school, there are two other issues here, big picture. What's the pandemic of cell phone usage and the soul-sucking effect it has, especially in our young people, and the mental robbing of the mental process it's having on our young people. This is a very serious issue. And it's happening all over the world. And I don't have answers for this.
Yeah.
But this cell phone usage and its abuse is a pandemic. I don't know where this ball of confusion is going to stop. But for it to be this easy in
right.
our culture to act of terrorism is beyond the pale.
Yeah. Yes, and as one of the key victims, I would say, do you personally have a desire to speak, to have a conversation with this juvenile, whoever he or she is, to take part in repairing the harm in some way?
Well, first of all, there has to be healing here.
Yeah.
This young person has to be healed and has to know the effects of their actions.
Right.
I mean, this is an enormous disconnect.
Right.
That you can walk into a school and do this. There's a total disconnect there of the effect that it have on people, number one. And I'm curious about the family. Where's the connection between this individual and the family involved? That was this person not raised in a family culture that was clear that this kind of thing is totally unacceptable, especially with all the school homicides going on in the country? Where has this individual been? Where has this family been? And we need to sit down and talk about it. First of all, you have to hear the effects you have on you, me, and my neighbor. But number two, I hope you got to get to a point that there's some connection here. This is not cyber world. I'm not cyber. I'm real. And so are the real people who were in that room that day. And this has to be addressed. I've heard of restorative justice. I've not studied it, but I assume it's the dialogue between who I think is the perpetrator and who I think are the victims, a back and forth kind of open thing, beyond the punitive thing. Let's sit down, let's talk. And I think people need to ask the folks at Lake County, especially the victim witness coordinator in Lake County, if restorative justice, that process, is even part of the discussion. It may or may not be. And I think that has to be asked. I'm not sure if that is. So that term and the education thereof needs to be explored.
Yeah. Well, and you speak so well about this incredible disconnect, you know, between just the power that every child can wield in a school in today's world. It's just enormously disconnected from maybe what kids are thinking about or their intentions or what they, you know, just what where their minds are at. And like you say, I think bringing people together to discuss could be, you know, more impactful than any sentence, any reparations in just bridging reality to reality. And this is what, you know, we do still live in a world of people and of real relationships and of real fear and real love and real joy and real forgiveness and healing, all of that stuff. So I'm grateful to hear you speak to that in a way that implies that maybe there is a possibility here or with other related things to talk about.
Can I add one more thing?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
On a related note, last year at the Kelly School Spring Band Concert, which was a wonderful concert and great education, the way our band instructor, Carrie Bilbin, walked us through this little teaching thing she was doing with the mm-hmm. kids on stage.
Yeah.
When the young sixth graders got off stage, elementary kids, now it's time for the varsity to come on, the upper grades. I would say a half a dozen of those kids wonderfully came back in the auditorium, sat down in the front row, I assume, to watch the band. They didn't do any of that. They whipped out their cell phones, and in front of all of us, and we're sitting behind them, they got those things up in their faces, and they're texting and looking at things and talking to each other. They were 100% clueless that there was a performance going on no more than 11, 12, 15, 20 feet in front of them. And nobody got up to stop it, obviously, because these kids are in the front row. And what do you do? And, you know, Carrie can't. She's not aware. She's on stage performing. And I couldn't take it anymore at the end of the concert. I got up and went down there, and I corralled those kids because I sub-teach now and then at the schools. I haven't in a while. And I just said, don't you ever dare do that again. Do you have any idea how disrespectful this was? You got a text, you take that out in the hall, but don't you ever come in this auditorium and do that again. And these kids have to be taught the connection between their cell phone usage again and real life. They were totally disconnected. And I've seen my family do that also, Tanya, at wedding gatherings. Six of them at one table, their heads buried in their phones and not even conversing with the relatives in the gathering to celebrate the wedding of my nephew and his future wife. Mm-hmm. So we see that everywhere, and it's not good.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing it as you see it, Paul. We're out of time, but
all right.
I want to make sure that we will have you back. Thanks so much for talking to us.
All right. Have a great rest of your day.
You too, Paul. That was Paul Diener. He is the director of the Lake Superior Community Theater.